Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Yellow Dogs. I'm muted.
Try it again.
It's amazing what Stephen has to remember in order for get my face up here on this board. But anyway, as I said earlier, welcome to the Yellow Dogs, and Stephen, we certainly appreciate you doing what you do. Without you, we would have no faces.
Our voices.
So welcome. And we're finding ourselves in the 10th lesson. And now, where do we go with all the things that we've learned? Well, we keep building and focus on sustaining a meditation practice. It's where our next steps are. And applying what we have learned is important with patience and self-compassion. So we have enough to begin and to practice. So we want to just remember, we're just looking at what is predominant in any particular moment when we are sitting. Because we want to recognize and allow. We just want to see for ourselves what's actually happening within. So we wait patiently, following the sensations of our breath, and we're welcoming whatever appears. Wow. We welcome whatever appears from the physical body or from the mind. I think last week, Tracy, I think it was you that were kind of asking the question about the truth, really, that there are no distinctions about what's coming up. And what's in the mind and the body is one. Everything's connected. There's this oneness. And so I teach because I understand that how we learn is we divide what's going on. And then we get a whole sense of the lesson or what's going on. So all of life rises in a wholeness that we can't always see because we rely on the mind to perceive. Got minds been behaving. And the mind can help us divide life into separate parts because that's what the mind does. And that's how we learn. So we break it down into small parts and then put them all together as one. And what happens with awareness is there are no distinctions. There are no distinctions. It's just the oneness we feel or the oneness that we're in, or whatever you want to say, it's spacious. All connected. So we just use the mind to distinguish what's happening in our body or our mind, but that does not mean they are separate. And if you can sense that in your meditation, I bow to you, because there is no separation whatsoever. Perceiving separateness in order to train ourselves to live in wholeness. So when we feel this wholeness, that's awareness. No distinctions. So just keep that knowing in the back of your mind in your practice, because that's a very important point, and I'm glad, I think it was Trace, whoever brought that up last time, reminded me to say something about it. Everything is connected to everything. But tonight's lesson is about one of the biggest hindrances that's not really connected to the traditional five hindrances, but what I see is probably one of the biggest for all of us. And, of course, Buddha's already telling us up front that life is full of suffering. And there's a cause for that suffering, and there's an end to that suffering. And the cause of that suffering is our attachment or what we don't like going on, pushing away. And we feel it always in our bodies, always. So there is no, let's see how I can say this. Everything is silent within unless we add something to it. It's just that simple. And that's what we're looking. Where are we at? Where are we adding to this life? And what within us keeps us from living in the present moment where life is experienced 100%. That's what we're doing. We're looking at that quite closely, not thinking about it, but experiencing it. Remember that, this is an old, old commercial, so you probably don't remember, but there was a commercial growing up when they first started selling pushing margarine over butter. And, you know, it was a big deal impersonating real butter. So in this commercial, there was this flowery, you know, nature, Mother Nature, and she says, it's not good to fool Mother Nature. And then you hear this lightning and this storm and, nah, you know, you just don't want to fool Mother Nature. When we try to fool Mother Nature by adding our own 2 cents worth, we suffer. It's just that simple. So things are not as they appear. So we live in 2 dimensions. No wonder we're crazy. Because when we're not paying attention, then it gets very scary. And we begin to see for ourselves in the deep, deep silence that meditation enables, there's a calmness and a peace unlike when we are in our minds, whether we're on the cushion or off the cushion. So we have this relative life, and then we have this, we touch this spaciousness. And we're both at this time on this planet. So we're pulled back and forth. We go into one, we go into the other. It's kind of like, you know, coming back to the breath is the practice. You forget, then you remember. You forget, then you remember. And it's the same thing, you know, with your walking, talking daily life. So what we are practicing now is the understanding that our suffering can be stuck in mind states. And one of the biggest mind states that causes the most suffering and That's in my opinion, so take that with a grain of salt, is the feeling that we've grown up that we're not good enough. And that has everything to do with our conditioning. Because I know people who grew up in different countries and they do not have, they don't even know what that means. The Dalai Lama, when asked about it, what is this unworthiness, he says. Don't we know we have Buddha nature? He just quite couldn't believe it. But his conditioning is quite different than our conditioning. And I've seen it in other teachers too. So we want to look at our mind states. We want to look at especially these that we've been carrying around for a long, long time. And these mind states close us off to ourselves and to life because we're trying to live through these mind states and it doesn't work. So meditation takes complete openness. We begin to open a little at a time. A little here, a little there. A little here, a little there. But it all stacks up. This is a quote I ran across, and I don't even know who said it, but who said it said, talk to yourself as if you are talking to someone you love. Yeah, we're talking to ourselves. We are doing that. We just have a whole lot of opinions about ourselves and others. So we're talking to ourselves, usually not being very supportive, mean, or sometimes downright mean. So we want to shame ourselves. We want to, you know, put a bunch of guilt. We want to act like there's a possibility that we're not living with phenomena that is changing faster than fast. You're not the person you were a second ago. But again, the rational mind can't grasp that. So where is this compassion for ourselves? Because until we realize that this mind and body is a gift, it is. I've heard this all my life and really kind of ignored it. It's our temple. It is what will take us home. And to shame it, and to neglect it, and to not be conscious of how we are treating ourselves. There's no such thing as a sin in the Buddha Dharma, but I'd say it's a sin. It's not a sin, but what it is it's a reality of our conditioning. So we've got to stop and recognize our own suffering that we're causing ourselves. That's a huge step. And for me, the turning, not that I love myself completely, but the turning of that teaching for me was, this is not my ego. This is a creation. A creation, a magical creation in time of a mind and body that is not only precious, but oh, it can know so much. It can know so much. And the reason that that is good news is for some reason I just lost the thought. Just lost it. It'll come back. There was a reason for something. When I think of it, I'll tell you. But if we don't acknowledge these mind states, they have to be acknowledged. That they exist in the first place. So that's why we're constantly recognizing and allowing, letting it come up quite naturally. We don't have to judge it. We don't have to have opinion about it because it's not who we are, because it's going to go away. The mind and body is going to go away, but it's here now. And it can be useful, but not if we don't treat it with respect and honor it. So my path has been, okay, I think I can honor this incarnation. I might not can fall in love with myself in the sense of that term, but I can honor myself. And so bringing ourselves home to self-awareness. So recognizing the suffering we're creating for ourselves, that some teachers say is that's all the suffering we do. And, you know, much of our culture has a strong, stiff upper lip tradition. We're taught not to complain. We're taught not to act like you're not happy. And, you know, everything's wonderful. How are you? Everything's wonderful, you know. So when do we get to be real? When do we get to be authentic? And that is what the practice teaches us. How to be authentic, real. And we know it, we get to, when we practice, it's so easy to see the ego. I mean, the ego in myself is so obvious to me, and sometimes the ego in others are so obvious to me. And we know when people are connecting, or they're playing a role. And nothing's wrong with that, but being able to distinguish what's going on and to understand that is nature too. So we're in a pretty difficult and stressful situation, and I'm probably not having to tell you that. I think you probably have realized that. But we have to take a step back and recognize how hard it is for us and to give us the compassion and the space that we give so easily and readily to others. We're all connected. If this person over here doesn't love himself, it affects me. If she doesn't love herself, it affects me. So the more loving awareness that we bring into this existence, supports all of us because we're all connected. So when our pain comes from self-judgment, we get angry with ourselves and we start blaming ourselves. And so we begin to learn that there's no such thing as making a mistake. Because sometimes I'm in this little twitty mind and body saying things she shouldn't say. And sometimes doing things she shouldn't do. But thank goodness, I give myself space to do it wrong. Now, the good thing about it is I wake up to it. No, I wake up to it because the Buddha's taught me exactly. You know, he's defined it very well of when we are authentic. So everybody makes mistakes at one time or another, and it's a fact of life. We say things we didn't want to say, or we said it, and, you know, I just did it yesterday. I said, oh, why did I say that to him? He may never come back and work for me again. Kind of thinking about myself, too. But, I mean, and come to find out, he did it perfectly right. But, it was just my own narrow mind that couldn't let it be. So, self-compassion is important. And I love it that I have someone that I can say to, even out loud, because it is healing. Oh, Randy, I wish I hadn't said all that stuff to him. He's such a good man. I love him. He's so sweet. You know, I just got frustrated. So it helped me to verbalize it. It helped me to be honest about it. It helped me to be real about it. So this is not taking responsibility for our actions. That's not what I mean. It's just that we are perfectly imperfect, and we are going to make mistakes, and there is a process, a very natural process. And the very first one is to be honest about it. We have this phenomena where we can't make a mistake and be honest about it. Acknowledge it. Acknowledge it to yourself and acknowledge it to the world. Oops, I made a mistake. It's such a release. It may be scary at first. And then, if we can make it better and correct it, then we'll do it. If we need an apology, or if we need, you know, what we compassionately know that we could do to right the wrong. And so, I'm running out of time, but the Buddha says, I'll end with this quote, you can search throughout the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself. And that person is not to be found anywhere. The Buddha said it. So love thyself, dadgummit. No. Just remember who you are. You are very precious, precious, precious. Now wake up to that. And here we have an opportunity to do that. So thank you, precious people, for listening. And now we'll open it up to you.